let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday said tomorrow. So just do it! Face your dreams! I'm true.
Hello and welcome to Screen Tones, where we talk anything and everything webcomics. Today, we're going to be discussing the term blorbo, characters and how we write about them. I'm Crispy, I use the pronouns she, they, and I make the comics Ghost Junk Sickness and Lunar Blight.
And I'm Delphina, I use she, her pronouns, and I make the webcomic Zombulous.
And I'm Verithane, I make the comics Tyrult and Witchwood, and I use she, they pronouns.
And I'm Ray, and I use they, them pronouns, and I make the webcomics Overlord of Ravenfell and On Empyrean High.
Okay, so I'm going to hop in here to define blorbology, because if you're on any social media platform with artists, you may have heard the term OC, which stands for original character, or blorbo, which stands for, I don't actually know, I think Tumblr just made that one up. But the terms evolved because creators needed a way to talk about freeform character concepting. You know, whether they're part of a fan fiction or just the guy you always seem to end up doodling in your sketchbook, it's often the case that in the process of drawing and experimenting with scenes for these characters for fun, they can really develop cool backstories and deep emotional meaning in the creators' minds. And that's what we're calling blorbology.
And it's going to be really, really fun kind of diving into this with everybody here. We have a little bit of a nice little special surprise that we're going to do halftime in the episode. But for now, we're going to go to our little kind of usual with our questions. And I'm just going to pop one off and attack you all with it. So question number one, have you ever developed and original characters before you developed a story about them? So tell me about that, Delphi. What's up?
Oh gosh. Well, back in the day, there was a little anime called Sailor Moon. And me and all of my friends decided that we all need Sailor Moon personas. So my Sailor Moon persona, very creatively, was a Sailor Delphina. And she had power over water, but it was different than Sailor Mercury. It was cooler than Sailor Mercury, right? And yeah, it was just basically me in a sailor suit, because I think the Mary Sue idea kind of like happens to all of us at some point. We all want to make our little sonas. And so, you know, it started from there, but I also pulled that character out of, like, the Sailor Moon context when I was getting into the internet at first and getting into forums and stuff, and I wanted to try to, like, incorporate them into an RP. So this was the Sailor Scout who RPing with other characters and stuff. It was very chaotic. It was very good, but it was very much a case of, here is a character that really doesn't belong to any sort of narrative that I'm just bringing in to play dolls with other people's characters. Mm-hmm. And we're making a little story out of it. And so that was really fun. I had some others too. I had Ryle, who was a were-raccoon.
Oh my god.
She was pretty cool. They all kind of like coalesced into Sydney eventually when I did start doing Zombulous, but like it was a fun time. And I think also I did a couple of D&D campaigns over the years. They never really got too far, but you have to make a character every time you do a D&D campaign. And so there were a lot of little characters that I was like, oh, you know, they're kind of fun. They're kind of nice. I don't know what I'm going to do with them now, but I like to think about them. So that's been my experience.
Oh my god, I feel like my third eye opened the moment that you started saying like Sailor Moon OC, like, not to be like one of those people that are like, oh, actually me too, but Me too. I was really huge into Tokyo Mew Mew, and I definitely had those moments where you make like an OC kind of like from that universe to kind of project on or anything like that. So, shaking your hand absolutely firmly here. I'm going to go after you, Thane. So have you ever developed an original character before you developed a story about them? Come on. Oh, in here.
So many. I actually, I thought I knew what I was going to say, and then I heard Delphi's answer. And honestly, I guess it has gone back kind of as far as that. Because when I was like 8 on the schoolyard and reading a ton of, I was reading superhero comics at that point. So like Batman, Superman, and I was watching like the shows, Batman Beyond and like the Justice League show. And also occasionally on the like Rabbit Ears TV, if we banged it hard enough to get a signal from Buffalo, we could watch X-Men Evolution and Static Shock on like one of the channels there. And they were very important to me formatively, to the point where like me and like a bunch of little friends on the schoolyard, we would all like kind of pretend to be superheroes. And when I started like figuring out that I enjoyed drawing, what I would do was that I would draw portraits of each of the characters that like me and my friends would play. And then eventually I just started drawing like more and more random portraits to pick like different like little characters to kind of act out like at recess the next day or whatever. And then eventually it turned into a whole, like, I ended up making like over 100 of these, like just like portraits of characters. And then sometimes when I had like friends over, we would flip through the book and we would pick like which characters we wanted by like slapping the page. it was weird. There was never like a formal kind of story about it. There was this sort of loose setting of like the kind of an X-Men-ish thing where they're all like in a school together and they each one has a secret superpower that nobody else can know about because it's their like secret identity, because I don't know, I got a kick out of that sort of thing at the time. And then after a while, like I turned 9 and then I turned 10, and my like the stories that I was experiencing and like my understanding of them was, you know, starting to grow, and I started writing more stories and like actually putting together narratives and looking at how like characters fit together. And I actually was kind of trying to write Witchwood as like a 12-year-old. Like, so that's how long that cast has been around. It's based on like the feels ridiculous things on air, literally based on dolls that I used to play with as like one of my other weird little games. I just, you know, I kind of fell in love with these little guys that I was bumping around. And I was like, how do I make this into a story? And because that's your life when you're a kid is school. It was in a school setting. And that lasted, like, I think over the course of about 2 or 3 years, I wrote out the whole thing as like a novel, really rambly and long. And then when I was in high school, I tried to edit it to like make it better because I was recognizing that like this is the product of a 12-year-old brain. And then after a while, I was like, you know what? I think structurally, like once I moved on to college, I was like, I don't know if I'm vibing with this setting anymore, mm-hmm. but I don't really know how to fix it or how to keep these characters around. So I started working on Geralt, which was developed in another kind of separate Blorbo way, because the characters in that one I developed through paint chatting with people. Like I just would draw random characters and then bounce them off of other people around me. And then I came up with this character, Kieran, that I liked and like a dynamic that I liked, and kind of paired it with like a story concept that I thought sounded cool. Yeah. And then eventually, once I finished Geralt, I was like, you know, maybe I'll come back to these Witchwood guys and see what I can do. I have a whole bunch of other like characters awaiting stories in kind of the background. Like, mm-hmm. I've just got this whole roster that whenever I'm like, I feel like starting something new, sometimes I'll pull them up and be like, what can I do with this thing? So far, only 2 really big comics, but sometimes I'll do short comics. And that it's a fun way to kind of explore some of those back burner Blorbos.
Yeah, I totally feel like even with Delphi, with you, Thane, we're thinking about like the origin of the Blorbo. And kind of seeing where they developed from there. And then eventually having a lot we'll get to that later, but having a lot of Blorbos and going through them like some kind of Rolodex to see what they suit for, like, either a picture or like a moment or, you know, just something, the vibes or something. And being really young and deciding this stuff too, like, Blorbos were always in the mind. They're always there, ever so present with that. With that, I'm going to go after you, Ray. Come on in. I would like to hear about your possibilities of developing original characters before you had a story about them.
See, for me, it was kind of interesting because I was a bookworm in elementary school. So I actually did have a lot of characters that did have narratives attached to them.
Oh.
Like straight from the beginning. It wasn't until about 11 when I started role playing that I started having a lot of original characters that didn't necessarily have a specific story in them, because it was a group chat and you just tossed your character into it. It was in the Dragonlance setting. Really, you just played, if you were in a character, in like a tavern and there were gardens outside. Oh, yeah. And you know, each chat room had like a different setting and you just role played that way. It's funny because two of my first characters, I have Caddis Quickfoot and Night Shadow, I have actually been working on trying to make a comic with them again. So it's like kind of revisiting my oldest Blorbos and creating a story around them. So that's been a fun exercise for me, I think, because a lot of about me has changed, so they need to change too.
Yep. No, I love that point too, because, like, you know, bringing it back to, you know, what Thane said about Witchwood too, how that kind of comes back and you're approaching it with like a different perspective with those old Blorbos.
Also got to find that. What's appealing about them. Yeah. And what was appealing about them to you in the first place, too. So
exactly.
Their core remains the same, but a lot of the details can change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like seeing the kind of like progression of like where the Blorbo began and where the Blorbo is now kind of thing. Because thinking about it, as far as my own kind of answer to this goes, when I was younger, I did a lot of Blorbos just because, like, I had a Blorbo character, her name was Erica, and she was part angel, part demon.
Hey now.
I love it.
I did that too. In fact, Night Shadow eventually turned into a half angel for a little bit, and I'm like, oh gosh.
But everybody, there's a twist. She's also part dragon.
Ooh.
Yes.
And she was just my character that I made. I was very inspired by the game Legend of Legaia. Absolutely years ago, and she kind of came from one of the characters there, and then, you know, you're just interested in a bunch of other things. So usually Blorbos come from this primordial soup of things. And I remember having her, she was like my first hashtag official OC. What we used to do, oh god, you're right, Thane, you're gonna be embarrassing things on the air. But what I used to do with my co-creator Space, because she's my sister, and we used to share our rooms together growing up, we'd have our two walls. So we'd have the two beds, and against each bed with the wall, we'd have a mural of every OC that we would make and just be inspired. And we would tape it to the wall. Like, I made up a new OC, the reference for this OC goes on the wall, just in case my sister wants to draw this OC. And then the best part was is that we put copyrighted on it. So, you know, just in case anybody...
Original character, do not steal from your bedroom.
Yeah, just in case anybody comes in and it's like, wait a second, I love this OC's drip, I'm gonna steal it. From like an 8-year-old. But that's just the things that we used to do. And they didn't have stories. They were just they were there for like RP time, like Ray, or they were there for like doll time, like Thane. And it's just, they were just there. And like, we used to play paper dolls a lot, and like, we would either cut them out or we'd make little clay figures of them. And then you just act out stuff like a Barbie scene or an RP or whatever. And that's just how they were. So it is interesting to see where they've come from now. I'll call myself later in the questions, but that's actually a good segue to the next question. And I'm going to go after you, Delphi. What is your advice to someone who has a lot of characters that they care about and wants to incorporate them into something like a webcomic? So, you know, with a whole mural of Blorbos, but they want people to care.
It's tricky. It can be very tricky, because I think a lot of the story and a lot of the love comes from your own brain, and you haven't exactly explained that to an outside reader yet. So when you're trying to make that shift, like, they don't automatically know who this person is and what makes them important. So I think first and foremost, you need to get outside of your own head. If that involves like other creators reviewing your stuff, your initial pages or something, and say, mm-hmm. okay, what do you think of this character? What do you think their deal is? Do you like them? What kind of adjectives would you associate with them? Are they edgy? Are they cool? Are they funny? Just all of that kind of stuff, because you're going to have a lot of stew that you've been marinating in, especially if you've had these characters since you were 8 or whatever. So that's my first piece of advice. And we've all been talking about, too, how creating OCs or creating Blorbos, that can be a very social thing. That's a social activity that you do with your friends or your siblings. And even if they're 100% your property, like, you drew this character, you always played this character, none of your friends have any claim to this character, if your friends know and liked your characters, you might find it harder to do as much with them, because you don't want to change anything, because you have positive emotions associated with those memories.
Yes.
And that might manifest in like what kind of dynamics they have with other characters. You might want to try to pull in the other characters that they liked to talk to back in the day. That can lead down a dangerous path of, okay, well, now you have to get sign off from your friends from when you were 8, you might not talk to anymore. And that gets a little messy. So to any extent that you could make that simpler for yourself, that would be certainly something I would recommend. And also, sometimes you can't. Sometimes it's just like, you know what? I did like this character. I kind of have some ideas for them, but like, it's off the table. This is going to be too complicated for me. It's going to be too complicated for my friends. And I don't think I can adapt them to a story that I want to tell at my current stage in life. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to also just say, you know what? I'm going to take some of the aspects I like from this character, and I'm going to come up with a new character. And they're distinct from the other person, so I won't necessarily have all of those emotional attachments to them. And that can help you move forward, because, you know, at the end of the day, webcomics are a marathon, and the larger story that you want to tell has to be able to sustain itself for years mm-hmm. while you're putting together this story. And if you're too attached to dynamics or other things that don't represent who you are today or what you want to say today, that's not going to be a sustainable comic for you. You might struggle with that. So whatever you can do, give yourself permission to be looser with the concept of the character, or mash a couple different characters into one character so that you have that space.
You know, it's always interesting thinking about like kind of like where the Blorbos came from and the origin of the Blorbo. And then eventually adapting them into something like a webcomic, because I've done that myself. The cast of Ghost Junk Sickness came from fan characters of Final Fantasy VII. And, you know, they just kind of grew from there. And then you had to learn to drop certain aspects and stuff like that. But one thing that I find interesting with having a lot of characters is that because they were just Blorbos, a lot of them had main character syndrome. Like, they were their own, everybody was their own main character. So you had to learn to kind of, like, shave certain parts that might also take away from what made that character the character. So, you know, listening to what you were saying there, Delphi, was it's interesting because, you know, there are going to be some things that you're going to have to kind of sacrifice a bit and reshape. Also, when you kind of collaborate with other people to make it into a cohesive story, because, you know, there's a difference between, you know, having a role play with friends or anything like that, or, you know, sometimes even a D&D campaign and having like onlookers kind of come in. Now, they've been more successful with, like, you know, the popularity with live shows and stuff like that kind of on the rise now. But, you know, there's still like an intimate kind of sense to it. And so I think that you do have to, you know, take a step back and think, okay, what am I going to be dropping from my character to fit them into something? Thane, what's your opinion on this? You know, what's your advice to someone with all those blorbos and they want like a story?
Honestly, I want to kind of tag on to Delphi's point, because I do think that change is going to be essential as anytime you're looking at taking some story element from one context and dropping it into another, you're definitely going to, or even taking them from no context at all. Mm-hmm. If they're just like an orb in your mind and you're just going to plop it into a new space, you're going to have to find ways to make these things tie into one another and connect together. So if whether you're extracting them from an existing role play with friends or a D&D campaign, all those little threads of like their backstory and their personality and how they relate to other people, if some of those are going to be key to that character's appeal, like if the thing that makes you the most passionate about their character is the fact that they are having to maintain a secret identity and like a superpower that they can't control, mm-hmm. and keep that all secret from their friends or something like that, now you have to find a way to replicate that in this brand new environment, like completely separate from that initial context of like your friends OC, yeah. or your like D&D party and stuff like that. So like sitting down and really thinking about it, like, okay, what is the core of this character? What is that thing that makes me really want to keep them? What's the thing that makes them a blorbo, yeah. and not just like a name on a piece of paper? And can you put that into another setting without losing your affection for it? And if so, how? And it might take time. It sometimes can take years. I actually, with Witchwood in specific, when I was going through that story, I initially had a completely different protagonist in those earliest versions of it. Like the main character of Witchwood had a main character. Like the current iteration of it is very much like a four-man kind of party. Like, and there's two who were kind of the ones who show up in my marketing the most, but all four of them are kind of important to the plot. But there used to be a single actual main character who was kind of an audience proxy. And her name was Kitty, and she was also one of my dolls. And like, she didn't really have like a power or a deal, but she was sort of like that audience lens. Like, mm-hmm. she like watched everything else happen, and she was very much like, she was just kind of like the, I don't know, I don't want to call it like the innocent one who like just like, I just want to be friends and help people out, like stuff like that. Because I guess at the time I was initially coming up with it, like I thought that like a story needed that, because some stories do. You have your, like, I don't know, your Bella Swan or whatever to like sort of take everything in for the first time and be new to everything and not know anything about magic and whatnot. And as I started kind of trying to develop the new version of the story, separating it all from a school setting, taking these characters, like just kind of picking them up and rotating them in my mind, like what makes this person tick? Like, how do they work? How do they fit together in my story as I'm figuring out this new setting, like how does it work? And I tried several times to fit her in, like gave her a twin sister, killed the twin sister, like a whole bunch of stuff. And a lot of those early plots kind of centered around her, but like her personality was not really well suited outside of like kind of an RP mm-hmm. setting. Because when you RP, you can kind of just be like, this character is just me. Like, they'll just react how I would. And you don't really think about them as being a character with, like, an arc mm-hmm. or with, like, themes around them. You're just kind of reacting and being like, well, they're just like a person. They're complicated. They're interested in the things that I'm interested in. And that often doesn't actually work very well in a story when you're trying to present it to a wider audience and have it kind of resonate with a lot of people. Because characters aren't really people, they're fictional. Like, they're constructs that serve a purpose in the narrative. And I ended up just straight up deleting her and her ghost twin sister, and I kind of merged her role in with Tiara, which also reduced the number of redheads that I needed to have in the story down to just one. They were all redheads because I don't know, I thought it was cool when I was 8. So that I guess would be the other thing that I would really want to say is, like, when you're taking a new character and putting them into a story, whether it's because they're a Blorbo or you're like, my story needs a character to do this function in the narrative, I need to come up with someone for mm-hmm. that. Like, you could sometimes work in the opposite direction. Like, it's not always a Blorbo being fitted into something. Sometimes there's a hole and you need a character to fill it. But you should always be thinking about what their arc is and how it ties into the story themes, because that can really strengthen the whole thing as a unit. And that's definitely not something that I think about when I'm just coming up with Blorbos and, like, shooting, like, little pies in the sky. But if you want to be telling a story about something in specific, like the vibes that you want to go for, like, what is this story fundamentally about? How do the characters support that? That's kind of a very different mindset than just kind of brainstorming and goofing around. So yeah, that's my tip.
It's a good tip. It's an absolutely good tip. And I like that there's a lot of, like, experience from the RP side of things, because, like, I think a lot of Blorbos come from, you know, that engagement and wanting to explore, like, a story with a character, but not with the structure that an actual story that you want people to read kind of entails. Because maybe you do have a Blorbo that you're like, okay, I know some of the basics. Like, I know that Erica is a half demon, half angel, half, there's too many halves, but anyway, dragon. And she has a mom who's a Valkyrie who also owns a dragon. It's a lot. I remember those details. It doesn't really make sense. I don't know what story they belong to, but there's details. Hooray, I'm also going to be asking you that question. Your advice to someone with all of those characters that they care about and wants to incorporate them into something like a webcomic, what would you tell them?
I would probably say that creating a hierarchy is very important for the characters, because you need to realize not everyone can be the main character, especially not at the same time. And that is something that I see happen a lot for comics that are based off of RPs, because you have all these very interesting characters vying for attention, and there's just, like, no hierarchy, like, at all. And sometimes they don't always have a role or a goal to play. It's just their personalities are strong enough that the creator is hoping that they stand up on their own. Mm-hmm. And also another thing that people looking to put their Blorbos in their comics should keep in mind is, even if they have a very rich past, you can't always show everything.
Yes.
A lot of my role plays, even if they're, like, different role plays, but the same character or multiple AUs or whatnot, some of my characters are, like, over a decade old. So they have this overarching, very rich background story that you're not going to be able to fit in a comic, especially if you put more than one of your Blorbos in your comic. Mm-hmm. So you really have to know to pare that down. Don't get too precious with the details, and make sure the character fits the story instead of the story fitting around them, because the chances are is that they're not going to fit very well if you try to do that.
Yeah, it can get convoluted pretty fast. And, like, I think that's always something that I think about, that we talk about in Green Tones, is that you know more about the story and the Blorbos and the everything than the reader or the onlooker will ever know. And so understanding what kind of details you're going to be giving to them and what kind of setting, what kind of stage you're going to be setting for them is really important to get like a outside opinion and see what it actually looks like. Because again, we know all the details. We all know the secret betrayals and the twin sister who's a ghost and dead now, and you're like, wow, this sounds awesome, but like, how do you convey that and whatnot? As far as some advice I could give to folks who want to dip their toes into something a little bit more structured and want to have like a story for their Blorbos, for their mural of Blorbos, one of the things that really helped me was doing a lot of OC meme stuff. Like, I would just, back in the days of when DeviantArt was nice, it's no longer nice, but you can still go into some search engines and or some communities. We have some in the Screen Tones and check out some little exercises where it kind of has your original character, the ways that they say sorry, or has your character interacting with another character. It was one of the biggest things that they had in DeviantArt at the time, where there was a list of numbers, and these numbers were to correspond with the characters that were also put into this list of questions. And you would fill out like 10 characters, 1 through 10, and you'd put your Blorbos in this, and it would say, what would character 1 do if character 5 was a basketball player and threw a basketball at their head? It's random, but
oh my god, I remember those.
I love me.
I loved it.
Love me if I was a worm.
Would character 7
the, like the OC memes, and they would have like 15 yeah. panels in them, and each one would be a different little scenario.
Yeah,
great. I did.
I like the relationship ones because that actually shows the dynamics between two different characters.
Exactly. And you know, I find that they're a good kind of warm up before you get into stories too, because it could be it is very daunting making a story with some structure and get into a comic and stuff like that, especially when you haven't really dabbled in a lot of that. The other thing that I've seen a lot of folks do is do ask blogs for their characters and kind of get some traction. And I've actually seen some creators basically make a story with the engagement that they get, like almost Homestuck style. I'm sorry I'm dropping that there, but it kind of, you know, there's kind of a play between like people asking questions for the characters and then the creator kind of getting ideas from that and extrapolating or going forward with it. So just kind of engaging that way. There's a lot of different ways to do it, which is really, really nice, just because we have, you know, that access. If you do jump into communities, you do jump into stuff like Tumblr, because Tumblr is very original character kind of centric, not as far as traction some may say, but you know, honestly, it's just a good playing grounds for RP and just exploring that stuff if you can kind of get a handle of that. But yeah, I really enjoy the OC meme stuff to showcase personalities, and just like the relationship ones that Ray mentioned, and just kind of finding these templates. Like I said, there are some in our community. We actually have a little thread for them. If you're ever curious, come join us there. But you can find them. I know they're kind of haunting the old DeviantArt, and I usually find them when I search like OC meme templates and see where I go from there. So a good exercise. Speaking of exercises, I think it's time to go into BYOB. Bring your own Blorbo. So this is going to be interesting. So for this exercise, I'm just going to tell everybody the rules. So BYOB, which is Bring Your Own Blorbo exercise, each host introduces a new OC, and then we have to do a round table of where we're going to talk about how we approach putting them into a story. So this is going to be pretty great. I'm actually going to start with Delphi, making a Blorbo on the spot. Maybe tell us a little bit about the Blorbo. And, you know, when we kind of get to know all of them, we're going to make a story for them. It's going to be good.
Okay. All right. Well, you can have my airship pilot character. I played her in my last tabletop campaign. And her name is Talia. She's kind of blue-collar, energetic character. I envision her as kind of like a Han Solo sort of figure. So she's good with a gun. She loves a strong drink at the tavern. And she's generally good-natured. She likes to look on the bright side of life. But she also loves to curse. She's sort of rough around the edges. Not always on the right side of the law, but the good-natured type of thing, right? And in her setting, there's floating islands that she travels from place to place in her airship. There's a set of water gods called the Aquaeus. So she's also got some waterbendery avatar type powers that she can channel to heal people or make illusions. And they also give her power to read emotions and thoughts. And if she gets a real good roll, she can mentally do it like a kind of Jedi mind trick sort of power and make people not notice her or something. And sometimes she uses this power to steal stuff that she wants. But yeah, that's her little story and background. She was part of a campaign, but she's kind of unattached now, and she's ready to jump into the BYOB.
Hell yes. Welcome, Talia. I love this. All right, Thane, give us a blorbo.
A blorbo, you say? I don't know what that is. I mean, wait, I'm on this episode. So I'm going to go with, I'm also going to reuse a character. So his name is Kale. He's got white hair because I like that sort of thing. He is a freighter pilot, also of like an airship.
Oh, okay.
Because the setting that I'm pulling him from also has sky islands, funnily enough. I love that sort of thing. He is in his late 30s. He's a little disaffected, estranged from his family, very cynical about kind of the world in general, but kind of has like a bit of a, well, I just got to do the job sort of mindset. And he takes whatever jobs he can find from whatever client will hire him, which is sometimes a little sketchy. And he just turns a blind eye because he doesn't want to know about it. Not his circus, not his monkeys. So yes, that's Kale.
All right, we're rolling with some good ones here, actually. Ray, give us a blorbo.
I will put forth Iris, who's a shady woman who rides a sky manta ray and sells random souvenirs to unsuspecting tourists. She travels in search of her childhood friend who murdered her family.
Oh my god.
And she is snarky and short-tempered at when you're not buying anything anyway. And I just made all of that up on the spot. I'm not reusing any characters.
Okay. I absolutely love this. Okay, I'm going to throw in a blorbo too. So we have Talia, we have Kale, and we have Iris. I'm going to throw in a blorbo called Clover. Clover Strangewood. And Clover is a, you know what, I'm just gonna go for some sky energy since we seem to be there. But Clover always wanted to be a sky pirate and wanted to fly a ship. I feel like that's some pretty good energy. And maybe, like, Clover is on the lookout for some mystical artifact or something. I'm sorry, this is great. And Clover also has part dragon. I'm gonna say that I'm going with this theme. I'm thinking about my old OCs.
Yeah,
gotta go with the dragons,
so. Exactly. Clover's always been on the surface, hasn't been in the sky islands yet, but is somehow mysteriously part dragon. So now what we're gonna have to do is figure out what kind of story what we would make. It seems like it's kind of writing itself, but what kind of story we would make with this cast and crew?
Well, hearing about Clover's mysterious deal, I feel like that's got to be important somehow, like this unknown dragon heritage. It's either going to be the kind of story where it like it's just there and random and nobody comments on it, or that's going to be like the core of the whole thing. So I think that's a decision that we got to make early.
All right, I'm going to ask Delphi to make a decision on that.
Yeah, I feel like we could do that. We could do, you know, she's on the lookout for a mystical artifact. Maybe Iris is the woman who has that mystical artifact. So she's going to try to get to Iris's shop somewhere in a distant sky. And so she has to like either like sneak on board a ship or something like that. And maybe that's Talia's ship, which Kale is also working on. So they've got kind of this, it's not a, you know, above the board ship and stuff like that, but she sneaks on as a stowaway, and then mm-hmm. they eventually find her, and Clover has to convince them to go on this quest to find Iris.
I like this. I feel like because like Kale seems to get whatever job, like Kale seems like the kind of character that's going to also have some kind of motivation for this mystical artifact as well for a good pay, but we don't know that. As the audience, they don't know that, but we're going to get some betrayal. I feel like Kale's going to betray us.
He's looking at it, but only because he has a buyer who has hired him to find the thing because they want it.
God. What if this buyer
knows that it's important to
what if this buyer is the childhood friend that murdered Iris's family?
Oh, that's good.
Writes itself.
Yeah,
it really does.
But I like the fact that we've just determined that we've got these characters, but we kind of need the antagonist, and now we need to flesh out this childhood friend who maybe wasn't quite as you know fleshed out before. But yeah, we start thinking about Iris, we start mm-hmm. thinking about what her backstory and stuff is, and what caused that schism between Iris and the childhood friend. But she murdered the family. So that's kind of the driving force. I feel like Talia maybe is just along for the ride. I feel like I wanted her to be the captain and stuff, but now I'm just like, no, I don't think that makes sense. I think she's just kind of a support character in this scenario because there's dragons and there's murders and stuff, and she's just doing her thing.
But you could also add some extra stakes in there if you want Talia to be more of a main character mm-hmm. too. So it's really a decision that you also have to make.
Yeah. Like what if Talia was actually hiding like a part of herself to get Clover onto the ship? Be like why would Talia let that happen? And what if it was like, I recognize you as kin because I'm also part dragon, but I'm not gonna say it. Like, you know, some more mystery. And, you know, that kind of ties like her having any kind of empathy or whatever for Clover's cause to get on here. And Kale's just there for the money and betrayal. And, you know, Iris is helping out there, too, like getting them all kind of fixed up. But, you know, we don't know some past stuff that kind of ties into all that shenanigans.
Okay. I kind of like it, too, because Clover does sound like kind of a younger character, and I envision Talia as a little older, so you can have some nice contrast between here's a kid who's trying to figure out her part dragon aspect, but Talia's older. She's come up with some coping mechanisms to work with whatever that dragon power is, and like you can compare and contrast. Maybe it's a, you know, a good thing. Maybe Talia is a role model for Clover, or maybe Talia is providing a bad example and Clover wants to be a contrast to that. So you could really work in some juicy story dynamics there.
I love this.
I feel like it could be like a pretty interesting arc for the, like the older cynical characters who are in on this, like just as kind of another job, and like becoming aware that this is so like something important to the others. And then there could be a bit of an arc going on in there. Like, what do they do? Will it end in betrayal? Will those arcs end up just staying in a negative zone? Is Kale going to be like kind of the medium antagonist who gets like defeated on the way to this other bigger antagonist or not? And does this thing, this MacGuffin object that they're all looking for, does that relate in some way to the backstory? Like, is that going to be important, whatever the thing is?
God, this is good. I actually want to draw these characters now.
I know. It's so good.
Oh my god, I'm actually impressed with how invested I am, because now I'm just looking at the notes I've been making as we're kind of saying this live, and I'm just like, okay, but we actually have something kind of neat here.
I mean, to the point.
Almost like writers.
It has dragons. I mean, what more do you need?
Exactly.
mantas.
I love the sky manta motif. I love the floating islands. I think that's going to be like very visually powerful altogether. But yeah, it's interesting like doing this because like there's no dragon stuff in Talia's backstory, but because I'm flexible with the character's concept, like, okay, we can work that in. We can say, you know, what's going on there. So I think that's kind of part of the exercise here. That's what it's all about.
Oh my god, what if Talia like used to have like more of a showing of her part dragoness, but like had to saw off her like dragon horns kind of all epic like to hide? I don't know. I'm getting invested in this.
It's all angsty like fitting in with the crew.
I do want Kale to have a redemption arc. I feel like yes, that would be good once he
I would love
he
for
realizes
that to happen.
Something is more important than money and it's friends.
Yeah. I like this.
That is catnip to me, so I would be very pleased. He's been pursuing the job for so long, and gradually as he spends time with these people, they start to wear down his cynical demeanor. And then when it comes time to actually carry through with the deal, either he does it, and then like that turns into a whole thing, or he like rethinks it, depending on when the climax of the story is mm-hmm. going to happen.
I feel like it's going to have like a fake out. Like it's going to be like, this is the end of the story. And then you're like, oh, it isn't. Ah, it goes on forever. Well, not forever, but
I mean, it could lead to some pretty neat places when you have that, like, you know, the what do they call it? Like the darkest night of the soul or something like that. Like it's a part of the hero's journey mm-hmm. when like everything has gone wrong. Everything is awful. Like all the characters are having a bad time. I feel like that betrayal could be that moment for this story.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm all about that.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely love talking about Blorbos, as do all of you. And I have learned so much in this episode. And it's really neat to kind of, you know, come together, make some Blorbos, and see if you can work a story together. That was a really, really fun exercise. And I definitely encourage folks, you know, if you have your own group of friends, even in the community, it would be really, really cool to jump into this exercise as well. But with that, that has definitely been a Chicken Salad Caesar wrap. I've been your host, Crispy, and you can find my works at ghostjunksickness.com and lunarblight.com.
And I've been Delphina. You can find my comic, Sombulus, at sombulus.com.
And I've been Verathane. You can find my webcomics at chiralt.sevensmith.net and at witchwoodcomic.com.
And I've been Ray, and you can find my comic at empyreancomic.com. And Overlord of Ravenfell is on Webtoon.
Oh my gosh, wait. What if the mystical item was like a dragon's egg, but it was like his brother or like... Yeah!
Thank you for listening to Screen Tones, a webcomic podcast. You can find all our episodes at screentonescast.com. We've got a couple links over there to our Ko-fi and merch shop, where your support will help us create more episodes and keep us talking about anything and everything webcomics. You can also find us on YouTube, Blue Sky, Tumblr, and our Discord server. Thank you so much for listening, sharing, rating, and supporting, and we'll see you next time.